Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Good morning. It's Friday, September 23rd. Welcome to the podcast sponsored by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, the makers of Leqvio and Clizarin. And we got a special, special treat for you today. A big show, someone might say. We've got somebody here who, to my knowledge, I don't think has ever been on this podcast in any of its many iterations, despite being incredibly knowledgeable about the NFL and fantasy football. It's former Tennessee Titans legend, former Patriots legend, former Stanford legend, our guy from FFL, my arch nemesis on the show, but also secretly real good buddy, Tank Williams. Tank, what's going on, man?
I think the only thing that's applicable is the thing that you didn't say, and that's maybe FFL legend. Everything else, Tennessee Titans, New England Patriots, that's all lies, dog.
Well, you are fantasy football legend, Tank Williams. Tank, for the people who don't know you, aren't familiar with you, just get like a quick introduction about you so the folks can get to know you out there.
Oh, born and raised in Mississippi, attended Stanford in college, got drafted by the Titans in the second round, played 4 years for the Titans under Jeff Fisher. So all the Jeff Fisher jokes, I get it on social media. I played under Mike Tomlin for a season in Minnesota before he became the head coach at Pittsburgh, one of the best coaches I've ever played under. And then also played 1 year in New England. Bill Belichick really is the mad scientist. Whenever you have a offensive fantasy player facing him, you really do have to take in consideration how he may be able to neutralize that guy.
Yeah. I mean, Tank knows his stuff about the NFL, about fantasy. He also is a great DFS player, despite losing the Guru Challenge to me on FFL last year. But nevertheless, we'll come back to that later. Tank, we have an absolute ton to get into. For those who don't know, with our preview show, basically what we do here is we give kind of a general overview of the game, but also our two things, one from Tank, one from me, on what you need to know, what you need to watch going into this game. So let's jump right into it because we have, like I said, just a ton of games here. First one up, I always have these ordered based on like fantasy juice, fantasy intrigue, just the games I find most intriguing. And man, I didn't expect to be here, but the Dolphins are featured in our first game, man. Bills at Dolphins. Bills are 6-point favorites. We got a beefy 52.5-point over under. So Tank, give me your thing that people need to know going into this game.
Well, for me, it's like, can Tua and those wide receivers keep it going? Like, I no longer call Tua Tagovailoa. From now on, he is Tua Montana to me because against the Baltimore Ravens, he told them to say hello to my little friends, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So from now on, that's my man, Tua Montana. But this is going to be interesting. Like, the Bills' defense is one of the better defenses in the league right now, but they're banged up in the secondary, and we don't really know who's going to be coming out once they go down to Miami to face this Miami offense that's clicking on all cylinders right now. I mean, there were a lot of questions about Tua coming into this season, but then we've seen that Mike McDaniel, we knew he's going to have a creative running game and that was going to possibly open up the passing game. But for him to just open it up, and like, the Baltimore Ravens knew he had to throw the ball, yet and still Tyreek was getting behind him. Jalen Waddle was like shredding him in the middle of the field and on the outside. Like, this offense is explosive. This passing game is explosive. And with Buffalo not operating on all cylinders, especially with the injuries they have up front in the defensive line too, I'm really interested to see if Tua can keep it going.
Yeah, me too, man. I think Mike McDaniel has been perfect from what we want from a head coach, right? Like, just get the ball in the hands of your best players. Obviously, we know he's like the run game coordinator kind of coming from San Francisco. Like you said, we expected, and I think at some point they'll get right in the run game. They're not 100% healthy on the offensive line right now. Like, that'll come at some point. But so far, last week, 88% of the air yards went to damn Waddle and Tyreek Hill. That's it. Like, that's the passing offense. So I think if you need a quarterback streamer because of those injuries to Buffalo secondary, like you mentioned, even though that I think that the Bills have the best offense and the best defense in the NFL, I'm still kind of okay like rolling out Tua. If you've had, look, I'm not trying to start Tom Brady this week, and I got Tom Brady right on a couple one QB lineups. I'm starting Tua over Tom Brady this week.
Yeah, and I think one thing we need to look at too, I know a lot of people, especially in a couple leagues that I'm in, people were anxious to drop Mike Gesicki because they had all the noise out there about him not really fitting into the system. But it seems like they're slowly starting to integrate him more into the passing game at the very least. And so I don't really worry about him being in on the running play because I don't care if he's out there blocking. But if you want him out there in passing situations, you're actually going to target him with the ball, which it seems like they did that a little bit more in this game against Baltimore. I'm interested to see how this is going to continue to play out. Like, obviously, they're playing from behind, so they're going to have to throw the ball more than usual. But he could end up being the player where a lot of people were kind of low on him the way his usage was to start the season, even though it's only been 2 weeks. But he could end up maybe not living up to the expectations that we thought at the end of last year, but carving out a larger role in this offense than we initially anticipated, you know, after week one.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Right now in week two, 42 routes for Jalen Waddle, 40 for Tyreek Hill. Mike Gesicki creeped up to 31 there for third most on the team. And, you know, again, I think that is a feather in the cap of Mike McDaniel. It's like, Mike Gesicki can play, dude. And, you know, they need a third option behind Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill just because he's not like a George Kittle clone. And this offense is evolving to more of a pass-first team, I think. So I think we'll see more Mike Gesicki going forward. That's a good call by you. Two red zone targets last game as well. My thing for this game here is on the Bills side. And, hey, Tank, I got no problem if it's just going to be the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs show, right? Like, if that's all this offense is going to be,
yeah,
goodbye me, man. We'll see if Gabe Davis plays in this game. But I still wonder, like, are we going to see any sort of consistency from a Dawson Knox? Like, I think at this point, the fact that, you know, when Gabe Davis was out last week, you know, Isaiah McKenzie and Jamison Crowder, both those guys just stayed in as the slot receivers and rotated on like a snap by snap basis. And we didn't, and Jake Kumerow ran out there in the Gabe Davis role. So at this point, I'm kind of losing hope. You know, Dawson Knox, I think, is just going to fix into the mix of these like tight ends that are not going to be predictable week by week. And now I'm starting to lose any hope that like an Isaiah McKenzie or a Crowder should really even be on the end of benches. Like, we know what we got out of Buffalo with Diggs and Allen, but I'm kind of curious if anybody else is going to step up here.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat with it. We know what you're going to get out of Stephon Diggs. He's going to get the majority of the target share, and I think that they're going to make up for his lack of touchdowns that he had last year. And you already see where he is in regards to being one of the highest fantasy producing wide receivers, and I think that's only going to continue. I think there is enough space in his offense to allow Gabe Davis to flourish. I mean, you saw Kumerow had the deep pass downfield in the game against Tennessee. I think Davis will get a little bit more targets just because he's a more athletic specimen than you have in Kumerow. And I think that they're going to take advantage of that. But as far as when you get to guys like Jamison Crowder, Isaiah McKenzie, Dawson Knox will get sprinkled in here or there. But I feel like the only two folks that you can really depend on in that passing game are going to be Steph Diggs and Gabriel Davis. And then otherwise, like, you're just going to be throwing darts at a dartboard on each week and just kind of looking at the matchups that may present itself to where it may provide for Dawson Knox to have a blow up game or something like that.
Tank, would you rather have, if you could draft today, would you rather have Justin Jefferson or Steph Diggs at wide receiver two overall?
I mean, man, the only reason that I was putting a knock on Josh Allen and for Stephon Diggs is like looking at their schedule late in the season, just looking at some of the teams they were going to potentially have to play, and also trying to factor in the weather that they were going to have to play in. But
that's true,
man, the way that they start off this season, man, like, it's, I mean, it's hard not to say that you wouldn't want Stephon Diggs instead of Justin Jefferson. But at the same time, I feel like Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson, we're going to get to this game later on, but they're going to have a bounce back, and I think he's going to continue to get that Cooper Kupp treatment, which means that he has an opportunity to explode any given Sunday, and in particular, this coming Sunday.
Yeah, among guys who have run 20-plus routes this year, Stephon Diggs is number one in terms of targets per route run, which is no surprise. Obviously, that Gabe Davis being back will kind of influence that going forward. But all right, game number two here, Eagles at Commanders. Hey, Carson Wentz revenge game number two here on our slate. Eagles are 6.5-point road favorites, 47.5 over-under. Tank, you're loving the way this Eagles offense looks. I'm loving the way this Eagles offense looks. What do we got to watch out for by this one?
Man, all the ballers, man. I think that there were a lot of people, like there were a lot of quarterbacks that received hate coming into this season. Jalen Hurts was one of them. People were talking about how they built this offense around him, how they were going to put weapons around him, how he needed to produce. Well, hey, that dude is producing right now. And I think when you look at this Philadelphia Eagles offense, it reminds me a lot about what we saw out of the Baltimore Ravens in their prime like a couple of years ago, where it's a run-heavy system where you have to put in an extra tackler to try to take away Jalen Hurts because you lose a blocker with the quarterback carrying the ball. So he's going to wear you out with his legs. He's been eating the two teams that they faced so far this year up. But now he's throwing the ball over the middle of the field. Right now he has a dog on the outside that he didn't have last year in A.J. Brown. And you can notice the difference between the Philadelphia offense this year and what's lacking in Tennessee this year. Like A.J. Brown, every time he goes out there, he signs his name on a DB's birth certificate because he becomes that damn daddy. That's how he's dominating DBs out there, and it's only going to continue. And so when you have that kind of weapon on the outside that you can always depend on, and, oh, you still got Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith, that makes for a dangerous combo whenever you're trying to face an offense that can run the ball down your throat and go over the top. And I'll let you talk about Carson Wentz because the redheaded stepchild, hey, that dude has been balling and proving all his doubters wrong as well.
Just one thing on this Eagles offense, though, a couple of things. One, I said this on the podcast with Dalton yesterday. I think we got to give Miles Sanders a little more respect.
True.
He came out and told us not to draft him, but I think he was kind of wrong on that because so far he's been actually pretty good in fantasy. And I think just this offense taking another step is good for Miles Sanders. But the second thing, and I just want to like slightly longer conversation about Jalen Hurts here, because I come back to the quote that Stephon Diggs had on this podcast when we interviewed him. It's like, it's hard to evaluate talent when there's not talent around it, right? Like, I mean, obviously you can watch guys and you can sort of judge their skill sets and everything like that, but it's sort of similar to me right now with Jalen Hurts is how it was with Josh Allen when Stephon Diggs got there. Like, everybody had all of these questions about Josh Allen, like his accuracy, his whatever, you know, can he really be the guy for the Bills? And then suddenly he gets a legit elite number one receiver in there. And all of a sudden, Josh Allen's a great quarterback. Now, Josh Allen obviously took steps in his game on his own. And I think Jalen Hurts, the improvement in his game, it gets so undersold because his adjusted yards per attempt from his final year at Alabama to Oklahoma, huge jump there. Year one to year two, huge jump in his adjusted yards per attempt. Like, I think, Tank, you can make the argument that each of the last now 5 years at this point of football, Jalen Hurts has taken a step and gotten better each year. But a lot of it also comes back to, hey, when you take, you know, Jalen Reagor out the mix and you give, you know, his targets to A.J. Brown, suddenly, yeah, Jalen Hurts looks like a dude. And I kind of feel like it's only 2 weeks. We'll see how this thing goes with Jalen Hurts. But I kind of feel like we're trending towards the Eagles need to make a long term commitment to Jalen Hurts because he kind of looks like an advantage at quarterback, not just a guy that they're trucking along.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you wait too long to figure it out, oh, it's going to end up costing you pretty. And so I think he's going to be in a situation similar to Lamar, where you don't come across these types of quarterbacks too often where they can dominate a defense in the run and pass game. That makes it so difficult. Like when I played in the league, the one quarterback that I hated playing, like obviously Peyton Manning, Tom Brady gave me fits, but Michael Vick gave us the most stress because we knew there were only a number of coverages that we can play because if you line up in man coverage and all your defensive backs have your back to him, he's going to eat you up in the run game. Yet and still, like, if you try to blitz him, he has a strong arm. We could take advantage of you in the pass game. And so I think Jalen Hurts is molding himself into that dude. And as long as he continues to exploit opposing defenses in the pass game, he's going to be a tough cover for defensive coordinators.
Yeah, and I think that same rule applies to fantasy, right? If you wait too long to see it, like, you're going to miss the boat. Like, at this point, people needed to see it with A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. Like, how much are they really going to throw the ball? But, like, if you just followed the drumbeat of the offseason and you knew the truth of A.J. Brown's game, which is that I think he's a top five receiver in the NFL, like, on a pure individual basis, then you could get in early on that. And sometimes, Like, we learned this lesson over and over again about wide receivers changing teams, but it's especially true this year that, like, hey, sometimes, like, dudes can elevate other quarterbacks, and, like, I think that's what we're seeing in Philadelphia from a fantasy angle. My thing on this game, you mentioned it, Carson Wentz and this Washington offense. Like, Tank, this wide receiver trio, I don't want to get totally down on Terry McLaurin because I love Terry McLaurin, but these three guys are kind of all, like, on an equal playing field almost at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we've been so accustomed to seeing Terry McLaurin get the majority of the target share and him ball out with it, but now you just don't have to consistently, like, force feed Scary Terry. Like, now you have Jahan Dotson, who has, like, some of the best hands out of all the rookie wide receivers, who's going up, high pointing the ball, making really great plays either on the outside and over the middle of the field. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of breath on your boy. I want to let you talk about him. Like, Curtis Samuel is healthy, and now this dude is getting touches in the run game. They're hitting him on over routes in the pass game, and, like, he's getting targeted like a monster. And it's something that, hey, if you've been a fan of his for a while and you saw the potential, you saw the athleticism, you just knew he needed to be healthy and be put in the right system in order for him to flourish. Hey, dog, this is your moment to shine, so I'm going to go ahead and let you shine.
Yeah, let me get stretched out from my victory lap here. Dude, Curtis Samuel is so good, man. I've been saying, and look, we've seen it with Curtis Samuel before. That's what gets, like, I think, lost, is that he was really good in 2020 when he had decent quarterback play. It's funny the Panthers have done this whole stupid musical chairs at quarterback for so long, but, like, Teddy Bridgewater is by far and away the best guy they've had starting for them since Cam Newton was released. I mean, Cam Newton obviously came back, but he was a shell of himself at that point. And Curtis Samuel had a really good year with Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina in 2020. Just, you know, he's a good player, man. Like, when the quarterback play can cooperate, and the quarterback play is kind of cooperating right now in Washington. And Scott Turner, you know, I keep saying this, Tank, he is the most underrated play caller in the NFL, the way he puts, like, these guys into position. And, you know, Samuel's explosive. He's reliable. He can do these, like, gadget things, but he's also a legitimate route runner that can beat press man coverage if you do want to line him up outside. So I don't really see this train stopping with Curtis Samuel. And Jahan Dotson is a dog too, man. Like, that guy is legitimately good and can, like, size be damned, right? Like, he's small, but he wins contested catches like nobody else. So Carson Wentz is kind of he's right on that fringe in terms of, like, QB 13, 14 for me every single week, because this team is just going to throw the hell out of the ball as long as these three wide receivers are healthy.
Yeah, for me, it's really hard to believe that Carson Wentz is tied for first in the league with passing touchdowns, and he's second in the league in passing yards. Like, that's unbelievable. But I think I just have to reiterate one point you said, because the play calling in Washington has been magically delicious. And you notice it because when they're in the groove, like, the offense just seems to flow like water. It's just, like, effortlessly. And then you see some of these other teams that we're going to talk about later, like the Denver Broncos, the Houston Texans. Like, the offense seems so disjointed and clunky. And that's when you see, like, all these lapses, whether it's penalties and things like that, that are holding them back. We're really not seeing that from the Washington Commanders. And so that's why I feel like this game, I don't know if it's going to be sneaky or not, but the way that Washington's been scoring the ball, this has shootout appeal all over. So if you're playing your GPPs and all that, you might need to go ahead and stack up on this divisional matchup, because if it goes like we think it can, there's going to be a lot of fireworks, and you probably need to have a lot of these guys in your lineup in order to take down a tourney.
100%. And Jack Del Rio and the boys on the defensive side, that's that the offense is coming together in Washington. It's not coming together on defense. So that should, increase the shootout appeal of this game. Next game up, we got here, Chiefs. This one might be a little too high on my rankings here, but Chiefs minus six at the Colts, to 50.5-point over under. My thing on this game, Tank, if Michael, and I know the answer, if Michael Pittman doesn't play, and I think he probably, it's trending kind of the right direction.
Like, he will.
Yeah. It's trending in the right direction, but, like, do we care about anyone in Indianapolis besides Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor? And the answer is a clear no. We really don't.
Yeah, that's true, because it seems like if you don't have those two cogs performing at a 10 out of 10 in that offense, then it really doesn't matter with anyone else. I mean, you know, you've had people hype up, like, Ashton Doolin. You know, he played, you know, pretty well the past couple of weeks, and, you know, he was that main beneficiary of Michael Pittman being out, but he's not going to do anything major for you. I mean, he's just a guy out there. I mean, what you need out of that Colts offense is the offensive line to play a lot better, so you can run the ball more effectively. And so Matt Ryan isn't out there and playing how Carson Wentz was playing behind that offensive line last year. Like, you thought you was getting rid of Carson Wentz, you was going to get an upgrade of Matt Ryan, But now the production that you expected to get out of Matt Ryan and Indy is balling out in Washington right now. So they need to resolve that somehow. And I think having that come to Jesus moment in Jacksonville, like they had to press the life alert button on the necklace. Like it's that bad in Indianapolis right now. I think after being shut out by a divisional rival and also tying the game in Houston that you should have won in week one, that's going to make them bounce back and play a little bit harder. The tough thing about this is that you have to go and face the Kansas City Chiefs team that's clicking on all cylinders right now. That's where they're going to run into a brick wall.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance that the Colts are staring down like a really bad start to the season here at this point. And the panic will be all out. At the same time, though, this is what happens every time with the Colts. Like, weren't they 1-3 to start last year? And then they end up, you know, blowing it at the end there, thanks to Carson Wentz. But, you know, that's a lot of like 3 degrees of separation, 6 degrees of separation here with these two teams. But what's your thing on this game? Because I feel like with the Colts, it's really easy. It's Michael Pittman. It's Jonathan Taylor. It's log out. But then with the Chiefs, it's a little more complicated.
Yeah. So with the Chiefs, it's like when somebody tells you something, believe them. And when we got into the right before week one started, Patrick Mahomes told you like, hey, we're going to spread the ball around a lot. So if your fantasy owner's like, watch out. And right now it's like, man, you should listen to this dude. Because right now, you know, you can depend on Travis Kelce. Like, he's one of the most dynamic tight ends in the league. Even when he plays against a guy like Derwin James, who's an absolute beast and could eliminate any tight end threat on any offense, he's still going to have like
tries to like to drive him into the dirt, Derwin
right?
James.
Like, he thought he was on like WWE. What was it? SmackDown used to come on? Whatever used to come down Thursdays. Like, that's what my boy was playing against the Chiefs last week. But when you look at this Kansas City wide receiver core, like, this is a wide receiver by committee, and it's nasty. Like, you had MVS that had 7 targets last week, and, you know, Juju had a bunch of targets in week one, but I don't think there's going to be one guy that we could depend on week in, week out, that you could just insert in your lineup saying that, hey, this is one of the better passing offenses in the league. We should be able to have one wide receiver that we can lean on. I thought that Juju may eventually be that guy. But the way it's trending right now, and I know it's still early in the season, I mean, if you have some of these guys, I would be patient with Juju. Mm-hmm. Mecole Hardman already switched him out for somebody else. And I don't know. I mean, the patience is running thin on MVS as well. I just don't know if there's anyone else besides Travis Kelce that you can hang your hat on and be like, hey, this is going to be that dude for me in my lineup. And that's even at a wide receiver 3.
Yeah, I'm with you that I still want to hold out some hope for Juju. And I feel like this is probably we also should talk about Patrick Mahomes' history against Gus Bradley. I mean, during like the slump periods last year, and Gus Bradley's obviously defensive coordinator for the Colts now, but during like that slump period of the Chiefs offense last year, the one time it looked like the Chiefs were the Chiefs was when they played Gus Bradley and the Raiders, and he just absolutely destroyed those like cover 3 looks. So,
and you know why? Exactly. That's, you hit on it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're going to play Patrick Mahomes single high safety, he's going to eat you alive, especially if you want to do that with pressure. The things that's been slowing Mahomes down is, you know, safeties lined up in that cover 2 shell and making them dink and dunk down the field instead of giving up the big play. And if Gus Bradley comes with that same Gus Bradley stuff, Mahomes going to eat him up again. That's a really great point.
Yeah. And just on this individual matchup, right? Like, you think with these wide receivers, Juju is kind of the dink and dunk short intermediate guy that's going to, you know, be a flanker, big slot type, more like a zone beater than a man beater for sure. Travis Kelce is who he is. And then like, you'd kind of think that MVS as that speed X receiver would be the guy in this type of matchup against that cover 3 single high look. But like, MVS is just not that good. Like, this is the weird part about them, like, playing MVS so much, and what they do so much with MVS is he's not a guy that's going to consistently earn targets, because he's not a guy that's going to consistently get open. But if he's going to have one of those big weeks, this is probably the week. I don't think I have the stones to play him in fantasy, like in a redraft league or anything, but maybe as like a DFS dart throw. Although yeah. I don't know, man. I don't have a lot of faith in the whole MVS thing, but I'm with you that Juju is still a guy I'm holding on to, you know, still is running a ton of routes and everything in this offense. But yeah, we'll get a lot of answers. I do hope we start to see more of Sky Moore, because I think that guy can play. And I think they need to, like, enough already with MVS, enough already with Mecole Hardman. Let's move on to Sky Moore. Let's also move on to the NFC North matchup we got here. Lions at Vikings. Vikings are 6-point favorites, 52.5 over under. Tank, what's your thing for this game?
I mean, this should be a bounce back spot for my man Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson and that Vikings offense. I mean, I know a lot of us expected a shootout in Monday night, and we were disappointed by how that Vikings offense looked. Kirk Cousins turned the ball over. Dalvin Cook couldn't get going. Justin Jefferson just threw up just a whammy. But, oh, do we have the remedy? That Detroit yeah. Lions secondary, bro. Like, that has been one of the worst performing secondaries in the league right now. And I feel like if there's any spot for my man JJ to get healthy, it's going to be against those Lions DBs. And so the thing is this. Like, the Lions aren't going to lay down either. Like, they have that confidence that, you know, they win, they beat a Washington Commander team at home. They play one of the teams that we're saying is one of the better teams in the league right now. They only lost by three. Like, you know what I'm saying? They played Philadelphia tough. And so now, and we look back to last year where they stole a win out of Minnesota. So with all that confidence, everything that they have building, this is a divisional matchup. And it seems like Green Bay isn't the team that they used to be. Like, the Lions legitimately feel like they have a shot at winning this division. So these two teams are going to go head-to-head. And when I look at all that coming together, it's going to be a competitive atmosphere. And I see these two offenses going back and forth. I think this can be a sneaky shootout that people aren't seeing it as being a shootout already. And I'm looking for both of these offenses to explode. But more specifically, Kirk Cousins and Jay Jetta to get back on the right track.
Yeah, I kind of like the over on 52.5 here. The Lions, I think, are going to give you a lot of over games because their defense is brutal, as you've highlighted many times so far this year. They're like the great fantasy carnival, like Scott Pianowski says. Like, that offense is going to put up points, and the defense is going to let the points up on the other end there. I mean, my God. But I'm really interested on the Vikings defensive side. Like, the thing that was killing them on Monday night, a lot of things were going wrong for the Vikings on Monday night, but the one thing that was really killing them on the defensive side was, like, they just kept sitting back in, like, soft coverage and just giving those free releases to wide receivers, like, getting easy receptions. And that's the Jared Goff, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if they roll in, you know, in week three with that plan against the Lions, like, Jared Goff is going to be perfectly fine to just dink and dunk and dink and dunk to, like, DeAndre Swift, but mostly Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's just, like, an absolute star at this point. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm just such a fan of him. I think this game should be really sneaky for fantasy. I guess another question for both of these teams really is, are any of the other guys going to step up, right? Like, we know Justin Jefferson, not his best game in week two, but we know what he's going to do. We know what Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to do on the other side. We know DeAndre Swift, Dalvin Cook, those are the running backs, but, like, I think DJ Chark actually has some pretty decent metrics so far this year from a usage standpoint, getting a lot of end zone targets, getting a lot of air yards. I think the Vikings could really use more from, like, more consistency from Irv Smith, more consistency from Adam Thielen, and even KJ Osborne, there you go. Too.
So that's the name you need to throw out right there, especially if you're looking for someone that may be a little bit undervalued and could be cheap in fantasy. Adam Thielen, I think the way that the last game ended, where they're trying to get him a little bit more involved in this offense, I think that's going to be at the forefront of this coming game. I think in order for the Vikings to be successful, you need to have another threat other than Justin Jefferson. He's going to be that guy. He should give you that Cooper Kupp production weekly. But at the same time, you still need somebody else that's going to be a dog that scares you on the opposite side. And I think against this Detroit Lions secondary, that Adam Thielen could be that guy. But before we move on to another game, I'm not sure if you had anything else. Like, let's go ahead and give Jared Goff some props too. Like, Jared yeah. Goff has 6 touchdowns, 1 interception on the season. Like, there's a lot of folks on social media that yeah. like to throw around that Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford. Like, they looking at each other like, But right now, hey, Jared Goff is looking like that dude, and Stafford is just doing what he normally does. So it may end up changing this week or in the coming weeks, but at least for now, I'm going to go ahead and give Goff his props.
Yeah, I think if you're playing in Superflex, you're playing in QB2 leagues, like, Jared Goff makes for a perfectly fine guy as your second quarterback there. And this was part, I agree with you that Jared Goff gets kind of too much hate. Like, this happens with sometimes with guys, right? Like, we overcorrect on them. You know, Jared Goff was the number one overall pick. He went to a Super Bowl. He had some awesome years with Sean McVay to the point that people were like, okay, well, he's not really that guy, right? Like, we know he's not that good. And we were right about that. He's not that good, but he's also not, like, trash either, you know. Yeah. That was part of my analysis with St. Brown this year, is that, like, Jared Goff is not a negative for Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, he is perfectly good enough to, like, feed good players the ball, and the Lions just have, like, a lot of good players right now at this point. That's why we like this offense so much. So I'm with you there on Jared Goff.
I'm surprised I never really made the correlation before, but Jared Goff, he should be doing that with Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, they're two dudes that took their teams to the Super Bowl. No, they didn't win it. a lot of times we feel like they aren't the quarterback that's going to take that team to the next level and actually win that game for you. That being said, I mean, if you have that quarterback around some pretty nice pieces, he can get your offense humming. He showed that so far this early part of the season.
100%. Well, speaking of Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford, our next game up here is Rams at Cardinals. Rams minus 3, 48.5 over under on this one. I mean, I don't know. Weird couple of teams here. The Rams, yeah. You know, whatever, but especially the Cardinals, Tank. Talk to you about their offense, man, because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, like, I've not been impressed through 2 weeks, even though they won that game last week.
Yeah, man. I mean, looking at the first six quarters of the season for the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, you want to see a dead body? I mean, they're basically just dead men walking. But then one thing changed. They decided to let Kyler Murray use his legs. I'm not sure if they try to remove that from the offense to try to keep him healthy or not, but that's a different offense when a defense has to worry about trying to get this young man on the ground. The defensive line is going to get tired because they're chasing him around because he's looking like Speedy Gonzalez in the pocket. And it's also going to wear the DBs out because when the quarterback's holding the ball that long, it's so hard to plaster your coverage. Like sooner or later, if you have some good wide receivers on the outside, they're going to uncover, create enough space for you to get the ball downfield. But I think the one thing that I want to focus on in this matchup, especially when you're looking at it from a daily fantasy perspective, sometimes you just want to pick your shots. And when I play against the Los Angeles Rams defense, I like to pick my shots with tight ends because if you look at a series of their history last year, it seems like a lot of teams, specifically the Arizona Cardinals, had a lot of success exploiting their tight ends against the Rams. Like, they end up having games where they were able to run the ball down their throat. And I remember Max Williams going out there and having himself a day against the Rams last year. And I'm like, yo, if Max Williams can go out there and abuse that Rams defense like that, my Stanford homie Zach Ertz should especially be able to do that. And so I think that Zach Ertz could be a sneaky play in this offense. When you look at my man Kyler Murray doesn't have a lot of weapons to throw to anyway. We've already been talking up my man Dortch. We know that you have Marquise Hollywood Brown on the outside. I don't think that we've shown enough love to Zach Ertz, and this could be a potential blow-up spot for him.
I'm with you. 5 red zone targets, 3 end zone targets for Zach Ertz so far this year. He in a wasteland position of the tight end, like outside really the top two guys, right? Like Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, you're feeling good. You're not even feeling good if you drafted, obviously, Kyle Pitts. Like, and Darren Waller's been fine, though. Yeah, we'll get to Kyle Pitts. But, you know, Zach Ertz has been pretty steady if you, like, punted on the tight end position a little bit. And I kind of see that continuing because his usage is just the most, you know, level here from, like, a week-to-week basis. I don't, you know, Marquise Brown is fine if you need him. I mean, I don't know. He's fine. He's fine. That's all I'll say. On the Rams, on the Rams side of it, I'm curious about the backfield because I think we know what we're going to get out of the passing offense. Like, we know Cooper Kupp is a dude. He's going to just dominate every single week. I think Allen Robinson will be like a boom bust wide receiver too. I think week two is probably the like more normal usage you'll see out of Allen Robinson. He really should have had 2 touchdowns in that last game. And Tyler Higbee, that's another guy that like he's on the radar at this point, right? Like he's a player we should probably like if you're hurting a tight end, Tyler Higbee is still widely available. Guy's been just getting a ton of usage. But my big question is on the backfield, Tank. Like we saw more of a committee approach in week 2, and I think that was what we were sort of promised by the coaching staff in the offseason. I also kind of feel like that is more the reality that we'll get. Where really neither of these guys is like a trustworthy fantasy starter.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's disappointing about the Rams run game is that one is going to be a committee approach where you're going to have Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers just kind of rotating in. You don't know who's going to have the hot hand on a weekly basis. But also, man, like the Rams offensive line is playing like straight doo-doo balls. Like, it's just nasty. Like, they aren't blocking anyone. I think that's part of the reason why they can't run the ball. I think that's partially the reason why you have Matthew Stafford that's turning the ball over a lot. But at the same time, I can't put all that on offensive line because there's some instances where you watch the Rams offense and it's kind of how we were talking about another game. Like it just seems to flow at times because Sean McVay, like he's an offensive genius. So he gets into his play calling groove and you see Stafford just throwing the ball to Kupp, throwing it to Higbee. You're like, dang, that offense is moving like a train, dog. Like it's just flowing. And then all of a sudden he just does a bonehead throw. He throws it directly to the defensive back. And it's like, dude, like, what are you doing, bro? And so until they eliminate that, until they clean up the offensive line play and they just get rid of the stupid turnovers, it's always going to be this instance where you'll see the Rams coming into a game where they're like a 10-point favorite. And I'm like, just bet. Just take Atlanta and the points because there's going to be somehow, some way, they're going to mess it up with these bonehead penalties or bonehead plays that's going to keep the opponent in the game.
Yeah, the offensive line should be like an Achilles heel pretty much all throughout the season. I don't think that's going to necessarily get better unless those young guys just really start to gel together. But they've also been dealing with injuries too, which takes away from continuity, which takes away from time together. And then, hey, Tank, they're not going to get like Stafford's always going to have those boneheaded plays, man. That's just that's part of the Stafford equation, man. You're going to get highs.
We can hope.
Yeah, that's about all we can do is we can wish and hope for it. Next game up here. I wish this game was better than it looked on paper, but it's not. Packers at Buccaneers. Buccaneers are 1-point favorites, 41.5-point total. I mean, I'll start here. Like, I think you play both the running backs in Green Bay. I think those guys every single week are fantasy starters. I think Aaron Jones is still a top 10 fantasy back, and A.J. Dillon is kind of still – I think he's still a top 20 fantasy start every single week. And they're dealing with a ton of cluster injuries at wide receivers right now. As we're taping this, I saw that, like, Alan Lazard, Sammy Watkins, and Christian Watson were all DNP on Thursday. So that's something to watch. How many times can they run the ball? How many times can they throw the ball to Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon? Because if it's just, like – Romeo Doubs and Randall Cobb, I mean, against this nasty Bucs defense, like this 41.5 over under might be too high.
Yeah. I was talking to someone the other night on one of the shows, and they were like, man, like, I know it's low. Like, I think it started off at 47 and it dropped down to the 41, and like, hey, the under still looks magically delicious. Yeah. Like, that's how bad it's going to be, because both of these teams are going to have to lean heavy on the run. You already talked about the injuries to the Green Bay Packers. We already know Mike Evans is going to be out because he went at Marshawn Lattimore's throat. Oh, and I love to see it because I just love seeing divisional opponents fight. It reminded me of that Andre Johnson and Cortland Finnegan.
We've seen Marshawn Lattimore, Mike Evans go at it before.
Cortland Finnegan's head. Oh my goodness! I know it's like every year they go at it, and so it's one of those things I love to see. But now Julio's dealing with a knee. You have Chris Godwin, who's going to continue to be out. Russell Gage hasn't lived up to expectations. Rashard Perriman, he's interesting to me. He made plays for Tom Brady down the stretch. He had a touchdown catch in the last game against the Saints as well. He's interesting, but I expect them to lean heavily on Leonard Fournette, because Leonard Fournette has been that monster. Like, that was another thing that we talked about, like the Tampa Bay offensive line coming into the season beat up. Yet, man, he's been carrying the load. Didn't really have the production that he had against the Saints that he had against the Cowboys, but I believe he's going to bounce back, because if you look at it, teams have been able to run against the Green Bay Packers in the first 2 weeks. They've had some success. So I see both of these teams leading heavy on that run game, which is going to probably give us a lower point total overall. Probably not going to get a lot of production out of quarterbacks, not going to get a lot of production out of wide receivers, but the running backs, they should eat.
This game's going to be over in like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
with all the run game stuff. So I agree. I'm kind of fading both receiver cores at this point. All right, Tank and I will be back with the rest of the week 3 preview right after this break. All right, Tank, next we've got here Ravens at Patriots. Ravens are 2.5-point favorites, 43.5 over under. Look, man, this game is interesting, but it's mostly only interesting on the Ravens side of things.
Mm-hmm. We have Lamar Jackson, who didn't throw a pass in the Wednesday practice because of an elbow. He had a sleeve. So interested to see how that's going to play out. I think that is going to be fine. I really didn't see anything that popped up majorly in the game. I mean, if you look at the last play in the Dolphins game, I mean, he threw the ball way downfield trying to hit Dave, and it fell incomplete, but it didn't look like he had an issue with his arm there. So I don't think it's going to be the problem. I think more so the issue is going to be, how can Lamar Jackson perform against a Bill Belichick defense? Now, we have to look at it in this isolated silo, though, because these aren't your same New England Patriots that we've seen in the past. They're not that on offense. They're not that on defense, but I feel a little bit better about the defense than I do of the offense. And so I know the Patriots are going to try to muck this game up. They're going to try to lean heavy on Damian Harris, heavy on Ramondre Stevenson, try to play ball control, keep the ball out of Lamar's hand. But I think that Lamar, with the weapons that he has on the outside with Bateman and Duvernay, Mark Andrews, if they can get Dobbins back, kind of establish that run game along with the threat of Lamar running the ball, I feel good about the production of all those skill pieces. Now, it's going to be more so Lamar. If Dobbins plays, he's probably not going to get the full carry, so I'm not worried about the running backs. Mark Andrews, maybe Bateman. I don't want to go outside of those 3 players right now. But I think you can feel comfortable with them if you're worried about how your guys are going to perform against New England.
I'm with you, man. Like, I just don't know that I don't know when we're going to get J.K. Dobbins back at this point. You know, he's week to week, whatever. We'll see. Bateman, dude, Bateman looks like a freaking stud, man.
He's a baller.
Yeah. I think they'll start to play him more. I have no concerns about like his snap rate, targets per snap, anything like that. Like he'll continue to play more. On New England's side of it, I think I do just want to say that like Jacoby Myers deserves some respect. And like if you're hurting a wide receiver this week, like you got any of these Bucks guys or whatever, like Jacoby Myers, he can be played in this game. 30.2 targets per route run, 34.3% of the team air yards. Like he has legitimately awesome usage. I know he's boring. He doesn't have a lot of playmaking ability, but like, I think he's a pretty good, reliable player. And like, he's basically all they got right now. Like Devontae Parker can't get open. Hunter Henry hasn't played well. They're like kind of rotating Nelson Aguilar in a little bit. I think if you need a wide receiver three, wide receiver four play, like you can use 100%. You can use Jacoby Myers against this Baltimore secondary.
I agree. Just for the simple fact that the Baltimore secondary, we saw what Miami was able to do against them last week, but that's not the only time. Like they were getting abused last year as well. But the one thing that scares you about the New England Patriots is something that it remains true. Like when I was there, Matt Patricia, like they tried to convert me to linebacker. So I sat in the meeting room with him like for about a year or so, like the little cup of coffee that I had with the Patriots. He has a brilliant football mind, but he's a defensive coach. And when you watch that Patriots offense flow, it looks like a defensive person calling offensive plays. Like that's just what it is. And so that's why they don't really have any synergy within the plays. And that's why it just doesn't have like this flow. That being said, like you said, like, man, that dude, Jacoby, he's getting peppered like some steak on a weekly basis. And when you have a matchup like this against the Baltimore Ravens, I'll take it. But at the same time, don't expect him to just be throwing up like these ridiculous numbers on a weekly basis just because they don't really have that in the offensive coordinator right now. And I don't mind Nestor Aguilar either.
I'm glad you had that note about Matt Patricia, man. Because I agree with you. You watch him call plays. It's like, yeah, this is a defensive coach calling plays. Now they're like kind of going back to like a power run scheme. And like the whole thing all offseason was that they were trying to install a zone run scheme. Tank, like you played under Matt Patricia. Can you imagine this guy like trying to install a zone running scheme when they've been a power running scheme for so long? It's insane.
I mean, the thing too is that, I mean, if it ain't broke, why fix it? I mean, that's a system that's been ingrained in there in New England for so long, and they've had so much success with it. So why tinker with that kind of stuff right now? I don't get it, but it seems like they may end up reverting back to some of that old stuff real quick, because what they're doing on offense right now is not getting it.
No. It is not. Next game up here, Jaguars at Chargers. Chargers are 7-point favorites, 47.5 over under. For me in this game, the thing I think people need to know is like Trevor Lawrence is starting to show some signs, man. And I think what we have to remember, Tank, is that this is basically Trevor Lawrence's rookie year. This is the first year he's getting like legitimate NFL coaching, right? Because we know there was a lot of stuff going on in Jacksonville last year, and a lot of it was not like NFL level coaching. So I think Lawrence showed a lot of progress, even just from game one to game two this year. The Chargers defense is no joke. Like that unit is good. Obviously Patrick Mahomes cut him up a little bit in week two, but that's Patrick Mahomes, man. So I'm curious just like what Trevor Lawrence looks like in this game, because I think the Jags offense is pretty well set. Like you can play James Robinson as a kind of low end RB2. You can't play Travis Etienne. You're kind of banged if he drafted Travis Etienne. And Christian Kirk, man, that guy is he's a top 20 receiver rest of the way.
Earned that contract already, bro.
Yeah. 100%. So yeah, for me, it's just Trevor Lawrence in this game. Chargers side, I also think this is kind of a rather straightforward offense in LA as well.
Yeah, a couple points. Like Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk, over 2 weeks in the season, like they're already the most lethal combination in the AFC South. Like that connection that they have,
crazy,
is so impressive. And to me, it reminds me of who? Justin Herbert and Keenan Allen, where this guy can be a target monster. He's going to tear you up in a short and intermediate game, yet he has enough speed to get behind you and make big plays. Kirk is faster, but at the same time, I mean, I think both of those guys bring that element to an offense. And more importantly, like, I want to see how the Jacksonville Jaguars perform against that Chargers defense, because I think they are really good this year. But I just hope that Keenan Allen and Justin Herbert are healthy, because there's only a few plays that kind of stand out to you on an annual basis, and there are some plays that you just never forget. And Justin Herbert's pass, after dealing with the rib injury, where he could barely run and try to get the first down on a third down or whatever it was. And then he comes back the next play and just throws that perfect dart in to set them up for that last touchdown. Like, that throw reminded me of Eli Manning throwing the ball to Mario Manningham on the sideline in the Super Bowl. Like, that's how pretty that throw was to me, given the circumstances of the game and what he was dealing with. And so, man, like, Justin Herbert, I don't know if he's going to live up to my expectations. Like, I took him overall number one in one fantasy draft in, like, a two-quarterback league. Took him over Josh Allen, all these folks. I was like, man, touchdown Jesus. In some leagues, I just like to be bold, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be bold with Justin Herbert. I'm going to take him first because I believe, like, he's going to be a dark horse to win the MVP and that this offense is going to do some amazing things. And even though he has to deal with this rib injury, and even though my man Josh Allen has started off the season on fire, I'm still holding out faith that he can be that quarterback that I think he can be. And that throw kind of proved it to me. I just want to see more of it.
Want to see more of it, man. Justin Herbert right now, 29th in air yards per attempt among quarterbacks right now. The only guys that are behind him are Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, but we know that's a weird offense, Kirk Cousins, and Geno Smith. Like, come on, man. It's Justin Herbert. Like you said, that fourth down throw. And I'm sure, like, you know, Austin said this on Eckler's Edge this week, and I'm sure you feel this as, like, a former player too. Like, you just respect the hell out of a guy who can, like, a warrior out there doing that type of stuff, man. And it's just like that throw shows how good, like, how good of a vertical passer he could be. I just wish they would unleash him. I also wish they had more speed at receiver. I love, you know, Keenan Allen's a rock star. When he's not playing out there, then it's like, it's Mike Williams, like Josh Palmer. I'm not the biggest Josh Palmer fan in the world. And then, you know, DeAndre Carter's got speed, as we saw in that fourth down play. But I don't know. Just I got some questions about the Chargers pass offense, but I think you can play Gerald Everett, who is like another guy at tight end.
Yeah.
It's really emerged well. He looks awesome out there outside of that one gassed play when they had the pick six.
Yeah.
but yeah, Mike Williams, Gerald Everett, Austin Eckler, all those guys are still in the circle of trust. And we just hope Justin Herbert, is, you know, gets healthy soon.
The thing too, before we head to the next game, just kind of be measured with your expectations, because we always look as like, oh, Jacksonville is usually like a bounce back spot for offenses. And I hope it is for the Chargers, because I have a lot of Chargers scattered throughout my fantasy lineups, but that Jags defense has been okay to start the season. So we may need to temper expectations as far as the offensive production we're looking at of our Chargers skill positions for this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet Eckler sees a lot of touches in this game, just because I think they'll be trying to keep it out of Justin Herbert's hands as much as possible. Mm-hmm. The other Josh Allen looks great for the Jaguars. All right, let's go kind of faster through these next dusty games before
let's
we get it. To our primetime contest. Next one, Saints at Falcons. Saints -3, 40.5-point over-under. My thing that you need to know is, like, how much is Jameis Winston breaking down, man? Because, you know, he seems like he's dealing with a lot of injuries with the back. Like, I think there's a non-0% chance we see Andy Dalton in the next couple of weeks, which I don't want to see, by the way. Like, I want to see Jameis out there doing Jameis things. But, you know, how good Jameis can play through some of these injuries is going to affect guys like Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, and Jarvis Landry to an extent. I want those guys to be like potential every week wide receiver three candidates, but we're going to need Jameis in a better condition than what he played through last week.
Yeah. And I think for me, I just want to see if they're going to continue to roll out basic Baker in that Carolina Panthers offense. Because, I mean, you have some weapons. Like, Christian McCaffrey, like, he's healthy. He can be that dude. You have DJ Moore, who blew up the early part of last season. He actually connected and had a big game with Robbie Anderson in week one of the season. So you have enough weapons out there to get the job done. I don't know if it's an issue with Baker. To me, and some of the things I saw floating around social media, may be a little issue with the play calling. Because a lot of times you have a bad play caller where you have, like, redundant routes on both sides and redundant formations. Like, it's easy for the secondary. Like, if I see that of an offense is lining up and I see receivers in certain splits and certain formations, and then you see the route tree kind of coming out, like, I know what you're giving me. Like, if you have this one receiver coming, like, shallow from the get-go, or more than likely there's going to be a dig coming in behind them or something like that. And so when you have people that see these routes coming before the offense may even know they're coming, and they're jumping on balls and making plays like that, then you're setting your offense up for failure. So I think all along, Carolina, we need to see a better job of offensive play calling as well as execution with the skill position and that offensive line.
Did you see the stat floating around this week that Matt Rhule is 1-24 when the opposing team scores more than 17 points? That's embarrassing.
I mean, dog, you like, so this is the thing. Like, this is one, like, so when I played in Tennessee, we always had this thing on the wall where, and one of our goals was to always hold an offense to 17 or fewer points. And so for him to be like one and whatever it is in that matchup where one in 24, if a team scores 17 points or more, I mean, that just shows you the kind of performance that he's been putting up. And this is in a league now where it's so much easier to score than what it was back then.
I was going to say, I'm not trying to age you here, Tank, but like, you know, that was a bit ago. Things have changed. Like now it's
over a decade, dog.
Hey man, you look great. That's all that matters. All right. Next game up here. Your Titans, man. I think I dragged the Raiders down here pretty far in the power rankings of these games, but man, I mean, the Titans are tough watch right now. We got Raiders as 2-point road favorites, 45.5-point over under. Tank, talk to me about your Titans, man. Not a great showing.
Man, I'm wondering if it's going to be the return of Derrick Henry, because that Raiders run defense is pretty bad. If there's going to be a bounce back spot for King Henry, this should be it. But I think the one issue that you run into with the Titans offense, and that's one of the reasons why I wasn't as high on King Henry this year, is because he no longer has A.J. Brown. And even though you talk noise about him for being like, not you, but just people in general, about this guy being banged up so often, like Julio Jones, at least when he's out there on the field, like he's a threat on the outside.
Yeah.
The Titans don't have anyone that's going to scare you on the outside. So what is that going to do? They're going to put an extra person in the box and just say, hey, I'm going to take away King Henry. I'm going to force Ryan Tannehill to beat me. Tannehill hasn't been using his legs like he did last year. And so right now, this Titans offense is a mess. Like, Burks got a decent amount of targets against Buffalo. And people are like, oh, man, I love Treylon Burks. I see, like, some fantasy folks talking about, oh, I love Treylon Burks from, like, Buffalo. Like, the dude had, like, 4 receptions for, like, 40-something yards or something like that. Like, that's nothing that's going to get me all aroused or anything like that. But I guess this is one of those things where maybe he just got used a little bit more than what he was in, like, week one. But that being said, this dude needs to have a breakout game. He needs to have an A.J. Brown-type game. If he can do that and then continue to stack those, this Titans offense may be able to get back on track. But until we see that, it's going to be tough sledding. But I think you may be able to ride with your boy King Henry this week going against that Las Vegas Raiders run defense.
I think this might be like your Dalton and I talked about this on the Stat Nerd podcast. Like, this might be your last time to like sell low on Derrick Henry. Like, because if he doesn't have a big game against the Raiders, like it's people will just be, you know, pissing their pants in panic mode. Like, nobody's going to want to trade for him at that point. So I don't know. It's worth exploring. I think on Treylon Burks, he's number 2 in terms of guys that have 20 plus, have run 20 plus routes this year in targets per route run. Like, when he's been on the field, they've been trying to get him the ball. But like you said, they don't have somebody that can scare you on the outside. And like, Treylon Burks is not that dude either, because he's learning a whole new position. Like, he didn't play as an X receiver in college. He played as like a big slot gadget type of guy. Basically, if you watch Treylon Burks' catches so far, it's pretty much just like crossing routes, slant routes against zone coverage. Like, that's about it, which he can make plays. That's what he does well. But like, threatening teams vertically, threatening teams on like go routes, deep posts, like deep corner routes, it's just not there yet. So he's the developmental player, and I just worry by the time like he's up to speed to play a full snap load, this team is going to be in a complete nightmare situation. So there's just like a lot of Titans panic right now. There, that's worth saying. On the Raiders, like, I think Devontae Adams' targets are going to vary, but, you know, he's going to have monster games like he did in week 1. He's going to have slower games because, you know, even though he scored the touchdown, Darren Waller's a good player. Hunter Renfrow is still around. Like, I feel like the Raiders are one of the easiest teams to project because it's just like 3 guys pretty much getting the ball.
Yeah, and I feel like this is going to be a bounce back spot for Devontae. Obviously, we knew he had the blow-up week against the Los Angeles Chargers, and then he only had 2 receptions for, like, what, 17 yards in the tub against Arizona. And I think that this is going to be an overcorrection in this game where you can depend on him to go out there and ball out. I think I took I mentioned a prop where he was going to have like over maybe it was like 86 or something yards or something like that. And I feel like pretty comfortable in that. Just knowing what that Titans secondary, what they gave up to my man Stephon Diggs up there on Monday night, and feeling that this is going to be a desperation game for both of these teams, which means that Derek Carr is going to make sure he leans heavily on one of the best wide receivers in the league. So I feel pretty comfortable about Davante Adams in this game. And like you said, I mean, I think one thing to note is that the Titans are usually pretty good against tight ends, but there's no way you're not going to play Darren Waller in this matchup. And Hunter Renfrow, I mean, he could see a lot of targets. I'm interested to see what Josh Jacobs is going to do against this Titans defense. Jeffrey Simmons could be a monster. The Las Vegas Raiders offensive line isn't that good. But at the same time, it seemed like my man Josh McDaniels tried to feed Jacobs at least at the early part of that game against Arizona. Interested to see if that's going to continue into this game.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs, Andy Barron's favorite player. Bengals at Jets, next game up. Bengals are 5-point favorites, 45 over under. My thing on this game is, look, don't panic on Elijah Moore. I know it's been a really slow first couple of games. Garrett Wilson's legit. He's awesome. But Elijah Moore's playing a ton. He's getting open. He's winning on his routes. He's just playing the harder position. Like, he's, despite being the smaller guy, is out there playing as like the pure X receiver. Like, if he has an eruption game at some point because he wins on those deeper patterns, I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised if it was this week. So don't panic on Elijah Moore. But Garrett Wilson is legitimately awesome, and like he's getting like alpha level usage from a target standpoint, an air yard standpoint, and end zone target standpoint. So we just need Joe Flacco to consistently drop back to pass like 50 times a game, or Zach Wilson to be good when he gets back for these guys to hit.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, this seems like the game script favors Garrett Wilson to continue to get off. I mean, he's getting a bunch of targets, and you're always looking for that next receiver, like who can be like Jamar Chase this year. Like, I don't think that the New York Jets are good enough for him to be a Jamar Chase, because what Joe Burrow and all those guys did last year with that Cincinnati Bengals offense was exceptional. But at the same time, I believe he's going to continue to get the lion's share of the targets in his offense, and he can continue to flourish. I'm interested to see what it's going to look like once Zach Wilson is back. But Joe Flacco shows that he can kind of throw that ball around and keep that Jets offense in the game if they need to go ahead and sling it like 30, 40 times in the game. I think one thing that I'm trying to pinpoint is Joe Mixon. Like, he's been getting a lot of volume. Really hasn't translated to a lot of production because that Cincinnati Bengals team has just been struggling. But, man, look at this. Like, Nick Chubb ran through that New York Jets defense. Like, he drank the tap water down in Mexico. Like, it was just flowing, dog. And so I expect Mixon, with the volume that he's getting, I expect him to be able to kind of help get the Cincinnati Bengals team back on track. Hold it together, dog.
I'm trying. Hey, you're right though. Look, the Jets defense has been terrible too. I mean, they were and this is an improvement because last year they were dead last in defensive EPA allowed, but this year they're 31st despite all like the money they poured into this thing. So this should be a big Joe Mixon game. Like, I think he is tank. He should definitely be in your like core running back spot in DFS. I think this week it's a good bounce back spot for the Bengals as a whole. Next game up, Texans at Bears. Bears are somehow 2.5-point favorites, I guess just because they're at home. 40.5 over under. I mean, two things to know about this game: don't watch it.
Yeah, pretty much, dog. I mean, I don't feel like we need to waste a lot of time on this, so I would just say this: just focus on the running backs. I think Damian Pierce looked good to me running the ball against the Denver Broncos. I think they're going to lean heavily on him. Yeah. And then, you know, there's been this discussion about who's the better running back for the Chicago Bears, whether it's Montgomery or Herbert. But that being said, the Bears have looked decent running the ball because Justin Fields hasn't been throwing the ball. So I think this is going to be an ugly, low-scoring game where both of these teams are just trying to run the ball to keep their quarterbacks out of making mistakes. And with me saying that, watch it end up being like this crazy shootout, but I don't see it.
I don't see it either. I do think Nico Collins is a decent sleeper in this game because the Bears' pass defense is brutal, and he got 9 targets last week, and I think is actually a pretty decent player. So that's all we can say on that one. Last game up here, Falcons at Seahawks. Seahawks -2, 42.5 over-under. We both kind of have something here about Kyle Pitts, basically. So, Tank, it's like the question of the week in fantasy, so I got to ask you, where are you at with the whole Kyle Pitts thing?
Man, so like in one of my leagues, it's like the league that I've been in the longest with some of my college buddies. man, I got sniped on Mark Andrews. And I was like, man, I want to make sure, because we played two tight ends. So I was like, I want to make sure I at least have like one
what do you
stud.
Guys, what do you guys hate yourselves?
Dog, we love punishing each other, but it makes it fun, dog. So, man, I feel like now it feels like the biggest reach of the draft. Like I took Kyle Pitts because, I mean, I saw him. I was like, man, dog, this dude is a specimen. At least when you saw him in a preseason, a limited amount of time that he played, it was like, all right, it looks like Arthur Smith is going to get this dude the ball. But the way this season has started, Arthur Smith talking about this isn't fantasy football and this and that and that and this, and then you not just putting a ball in the hands of one of your better athletes on the team, like, it just makes no sense to me. All that being said, I feel like this should be another overreaction, overcorrection spot where they make sure they feed this dude some balls and it's a get back right spot for him. But at the same time, it's not like he's just going to garner all the targets in Atlanta because Drake London is that dude.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem for the Kyle Pitts bros is that Drake MF in London looks like the best. Like all the complaints about, Arthur Smith is not getting the ball in the hands of his best player. I mean, he is. His name's just Drake London. Like now, like Drake London looks like that dude. And I'm with you, man. I think he is the biggest problem for Kyle Pitts. I think that that's going to just be an issue all year long. God, I can't believe you guys play two tight ends. You say like that it's fun. Nothing sounds less fun to me than like, Tank in like a traditional 12 team league, like four
teams already hard enough.
Yeah, four teams are already like, well, I'm effed at tight end. Well, I don't know what to do. Now it's like, you're all like, well, we're all effed, I guess. So at least maybe it evens the playing field a little. That's ridiculous. But anything on Seattle in this game, I feel like Lockett and Metcalf are going to have some games. By the way, Lockett is like really extending the stretch of in terms of the gap between targets, like in games that Geno Smith has played, even though Metcalf has had some bigger moments. But I feel like these guys are, they'll make your best ball rosters happy because you don't have to predict like which week is a Lockett week, which week is a Metcalf week, because I don't know that it's going to necessarily be both.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Lockett was impressive, had over 100 yards receiving last week. And I guess one thing that you can find encouraging maybe is that Pete Carroll is saying that we need to let Geno cook. We're going to have to see what that looks like. With all that being said, I just really don't have too like high of expectations for that offense. I think the running back by committee is going to be a mess. So I'm really not sure that you can depend on one of those running backs. But I feel like in certain spots, there will be a place for these wide receivers to flourish if the game script presents itself and they allow Geno to throw the ball and Geno is efficient and effective at throwing it.
Let Geno cook. I'm pretty sure Pete's just being petty at this point. All right, let's move to the primetime games here, starting with 49ers, 1.5-point favorites at Denver, 44.5 over under. Tank. Who are we going to talk about in this game, buddy?
I think at this point, I can still say his name. I can still say Brandon Ayuk. And I think that Jimmy Garoppolo coming back. I mean, how do you feel about this? I'm interested to hear your perspective. How do you feel about, is he just the same guy with Trey Lance playing as Jimmy Garoppolo? Or do you see like a downtick or uptick because of Jimmy being inserted into the lineup moving forward?
So that's a great question. I think that couple of different things here. One, a lot of the analysis on Brandon Ayuk, this like why he was going to take a step from last year to this year, even though last year once you and I finally got past our nonsense, for those uninitiated, you should be watching Fantasy Football Live. If you're listening to this show not watching Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning, what the hell are you doing with your life? But Tank and I had a lot of fun back and forth about Brandon Ayuk last year, and once he finally got himself out the doghouse, you know, he was like a top 20 fantasy receiver last year. But I think part of the hope for him taking another step this year was that Trey Lance was going to unlock the vertical parts of the field more than Jimmy Garoppolo was. We'll never know if that was really going to happen or not with Trey Lance, although it probably wasn't really trending in the right direction. But one thing that was interesting to me, Tank, and this is kind of narrative-ish, so maybe you can help me speak on this, but I thought like when Jimmy came off the bench last week, he played a really good game and he was like kind of aggressive and even spoke, like he was throwing that thing deep outside the numbers. Ayuk had a deep pass interference play. Like, I think it's going to be there for Ayuk because I think that Ayuk has taken another step as a player. You know, that was the drumbeat all off season. I think Jimmy and Ayuk haven't had a lot of time together either. When Ayuk popped off as a rookie, Jimmy was hurt. So I think it's probably like, at worst, a lateral move and potentially good for Brandon Ayuk if Jimmy's going to continue to be aggressive. Because, and he kind of said this after the game, right, that he felt like it was like 2017 again, where he could just get out there and play loose because he is kind of like nothing to lose at this point. So little narrative-ish that like maybe Jimmy will play more aggressive because like he has everything to gain and nothing to lose by this time, but at this point right now.
I mean, I mean, it's a great point. Like the way that the Niners have treated Jimmy Garoppolo, like he's the quarterback that they didn't want, but that they need right now. And when you've been in a situation where you led a team to a Super Bowl, yet and still they go out and they move up in the draft or, you know, draft your replacement, and then they give him your job coming into this offseason, you have surgery, you think you're going to end up on another team, somehow you end up signing back, then that guy goes down early in the season. Like, Jimmy G knows he's not the long-term answer for that team, at least he doesn't think he is. So right now he's like, hey, this guy's not, like, I don't have to look over my shoulder with this guy. Like, he's not coming back, and there's nobody else on this roster that's going to come out and get me. They already don't think too much of me, so what can I do? Just go out there, ball out, let it fling, let it fly, and then just play my way into another big deal with another team. And so I believe he is going with that mindset, and we could potentially see a more improved Jimmy G because he's not playing with that hesitation, that uncertainty of, like, he's just a play or two away or a game or two away from getting replaced.
Tank, would you like to guess how many air yards per target Deebo Samuel is averaging right now?
I have no clue, but probably like what? Four?
One. One air yard. What? Not air yards. Air yard.
Air per yard.
Target. Air yard per target.
One rib.
One air yard per target for Deebo Samuel. So I think he's going to play like a ton of running back, right? Like he's still their best outside stretch runner. Good he got his money, right? And good he got the contract bonuses because he could probably gonna hit them bonuses this year, man. So I think that like Deebo probably not going to return value at ADP just because I think he was a little too steamed up. But the air yard per target will come up at some point. He'll be fine. But I do think the C's are kind of parting for Brandon Ayuk to really still take that next step because Debo's not playing that wide receiver role. And obviously we might get Kittle back for this game as well. So I think we're feeling pretty good about Ayuk. I mean, my God, one air yard per target.
Air yard.
On the Denver side, man. On the Broncos side, man, I think this thing is still kind of in a feel it out mode. Nathaniel Hackett, I said this to Austin on Eckler's Edge this week. When you Google Nathaniel Hackett right now, the second result that pops up is Nathaniel Hackett memes. Like when it tries to auto finish, like, and that's, you don't want to be that.
Yeah,
that's
never a good look. Yeah.
Not a good look. He's still trying to figure it out. Obviously Russ, I don't think Russ is playing really well at this point. And he's also kind of down to like Cortland Sutton and these like five tight ends that they got if Jerry Jeudy misses this game. So I don't feel great about Denver's offense here.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a thing where there's just no flow in the offense. There are times where they look pretty good, where they're able to run the ball effectively. Javonte Williams was used a lot in the passing game, which, if you're Javonte Williams' manager, you love to see that. Cortland Sutton had his big game. Like you said, there's no Jerry Jeudy. Washington looked good in some gadget plays, but I don't know if he's someone that they could just depend on. But, I mean, he could be like a Tyler Lockett type guy for them. But I just think that overall, they need to clean up the penalties. They're, like, the penalties are just wearing them out. And so it just messes up the flow in the offense. It gets clunky, and then we just see, like, a lack of production from them. So once they could get a better flow in the play calling, Hackett can get better at managing situational football, and they clean up those turnovers. I think we see a much improved Denver Broncos offense right now, but right now it just looks kind of nasty, dog. And I think it's going to still take a few games before they really come together and give you some true juice. And that's what you're hoping for out of that Denver offense.
I kind of wonder if, like, from a personality standpoint, like there's too much rah-rah good, like good vibes from like Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson, because those are like it's total narrative stuff. I have no idea, but like, you know, they're both like positive, upbeat guys. Like, whereas Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers, like, I mean, Rodgers will rip into you, you know, like he'll if you're like effing around, like he'll give it to you, right? Like Russ, probably not the same guy. So I just wonder, again, it's gonna take time with this whole Denver situation. The backfield split, we did see like a move to more Javonte Williams in week two. I think you got to hope that that continues, because he looks like their best player right now. Obviously Russ's legacy aside, last game up here, Monday Night Football, Cowboys at Giants, the Daniel Jones Cooper Rush show. What an excitement. -1 on the Giants, 39 over and under. Where are we at with this game, man? For me, like, I think Cooper Rush, like, he's not that bad. Okay. Like, Cooper Rush can kind of can get CeeDee Lamb the ball. I think this could be a big CeeDee Lamb game. Michael Gallup might get back for this contest, which is only good news for this Dallas offense overall, even if he's not at 100% yet, because they also just lost Dalton Schultz. And, like, Noah Brown popped up for a pretty big game last week, too. So I'm feeling a little bit better about, like, CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys than I was maybe, you know, a week ago.
Yeah, no, I concur, because I was really down on the Cowboys. I felt like the only way that they could really stay in the game, and this still holds true, is that the Cowboys defense needs to be able to play like they did last year. And Michael Parsons was that dude last week. That dude can affect the game none other. It's hard to see, like, when you always look at a Los Angeles Rams game, you're like, yo, how is Cooper Kupp always open? Like, yo, Michael Parsons is the best dude on this team. Like, you should always know where number 11 is. There was like a 3rd and 4.
How is he always in the backfield?
No, he went to Joe Burrow one time untouched. It's like, how do you not know where number 11 is? But, you know, with all that being said, I feel like I want to know what kind of game is Saquon going to have. Is he going to have, like, a Leonard Fournette game where Lenny went into Dallas and he ran for over 127 yards or something like that? Or is it going to be the Joe Mixon game where they're able to shut down that run? And so I'm really interested to see how that New York Giants offensive line is going to be able to perform and if Saquon can continue to get off, because that's going to be the way that the New York Giants continue to have success. Like, you're not going to lean on Daniel Jones. Sterling Shepard had a big game versus Tennessee, but Saquon is going to be the dude that carries that team. And so this is going to be a big test for that Giants offense going against that Dallas Cowboys defense.
This is another game that could be over in like 2.5 hours, right? So I'll credit Brian Daboll that he's not just like running the Buffalo Bills. Like, he's got these guys playing well and like believing in stuff like that, but he's not running from like a neutral pass rate, like a really fast paced pass heavy offense, because he doesn't have the dudes to do that right now. Last question for you, Tank. I love Sterling Shepard. He's another one of my guys, but I'll ask you about Kenny Golladay here. How much longer is Kenny Golladay on this roster? Like, over under week 8?
I believe it depends on what's in the contract, Doc. Like, he may be that all season.
A lot of money.
They may just have him, like, deactivated or something like that, where he's just not live on game days, and you just make sure he makes it through the season healthy, and then you just cut the dead weight at the end of the season. Like, you can't control what your former GM did, and that's just maybe one of the worst contracts in football right now. And so you understand what you're dealing with. Sometimes you just have to go ahead and set that vase to the side, you know, because someone paid a lot of money for it. It may be ugly, but it's expensive. So go ahead, set it to the side, make sure it isn't broken. And then when they're not looking, go ahead and give it the Goodwill or something.
Give it the Goodwill. All right, man. This has been awesome. Tank, thanks so much for being here with me. Tell the people all about why they should be watching you on FFL Sunday morning, along with me, I guess, and Andy Behrens.
I mean, I feel like you need to be watching FFL, because you have Harmon, who breaks down the wide receivers like none other. He's been killing it with the props as well. He's super knowledgeable in fantasy football, as you already know, because you're watching this podcast on a daily basis. Andy Behrens has like some of the best dry humor. He's one of the smartest cats that I know is in the fantasy game. And I like to think that I approach fantasy from a different perspective, from a player's perspective, and I try to add a little bit of humor into it. But when we get into a long format like this, I could talk the X's and O's and the stats and all the analysis like anyone else. So I feel like you have a bunch of guys who are super knowledgeable about the game, come at it from a lot of different angles, and we give you the information you need to go ahead and beat your opponent's heads in on a weekly basis. So make sure you catch us all out. Follow us on social media. I'm at Tank Williams 13. You're probably going to say that a little bit later where you're looking at Twitter or IG. And give your boy a follow and just check it in. I don't put out as much content as Harmon, but, you know, I try to sprinkle little things in the social media sphere every now and then and get my chuckles and, you know, all that stuff at the same time.
Dude, Tank is the man. As much as we give each other on-air grief on FFL, we do actually love each other. And it is FFL is a fun show, because it's a lot like this show where, look, we're three dudes with different perspectives. We see the game different ways. And when you could take a little of what Tank says, a little what Andy says, and a little sprinkle of what I say, and like maybe you can bring together one good picture there. It's all about making the cake, man. You need different ingredients. And that's what we do on Fantasy Football Live, just like we do on this show. All right, that's going to do it for us. Like Tank said, you better go out there. He's criminally underfollowed on Twitter. Follow him at TankWilliams13. You can follow me at Matt Harmon _BYB. And while you're there, For God's sakes, go check out how much fun the At Yahoo Fantasy account is having this season. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review. It would help us out on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. As always, if you don't like the show, tweet at me directly. Let me know, and we'll just agree to disagree, and we'll move on. Not everybody's for everybody, okay? That's the way it is. Enjoy the games. Scott and I will be back on Monday morning with a recap of all of the Week 3 action. Until then, we are out.